Osho, The Hidden Harmony, Talks on Heraclitus, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 1.
Bhagwan, Heraclitus said, "The hidden harmony is better than the obvious. Opposition brings concord. Out of discord comes the fairest harmony. It is in changing that things find repose. People do not understand how that which is at variance with itself agrees with itself. There is a harmony in the bending back, as in the case of the bow and the lyre. The name of the bow is life, but its work is death."
I have been in love with Heraclitus for many lives. In fact, Heraclitus is the only Greek I have been ever in love. Of course, except Mukta, Sima and Nita. Heraclitus is really beautiful. Had he been born in India or in the East, he would have been known like a Buddha. But in Greek history, Greek philosophy, he was a stranger and outsider. He is known in Greece not as an enlightened person, but Heraclitus the obscure, Heraclitus the dark, Heraclitus the riddling. And the father of Greek philosophy and of Western thought, Aristotle thought that he is no philosopher at all. Aristotle said, at the most, he is a poet. But that too was difficult for him to concede. So later on, he said in other works that there must be some defect in Heraclitus' character, something wrong biologically. That's why he talks in such obscure ways and talks in paradoxes. Aristotle thought that he is a little eccentric, a little mad. And Aristotle dominates the whole West. If Heraclitus would have been accepted, the whole history of West would have been totally different. But he was not understood at all. He became more and more separate from the main current of Western thinking and mind. He was like Gautam Buddha, or Lao Tse, or Basso. The Greek soil was absolutely not good for him. He would have been a great tree in the East. Millions would have profited millions would have found the way through him. But for Greeks, he was just outlandish, eccentric, something foreign, alien, didn't belong to them. That's why his name has remained just in the side, in a dark corner. Banbar, he has been forgotten. At that moment, precisely at that moment when Heraclitus was born, humanity reached a peak, a moment of transformation. It happens. Just as in an individual, there are moments when changes happen. Every 7 years, the body changes. And it goes on changing. If you will live for 70 years, then 10 times your total biophysical system changes. And if you can use those gaps when the body changes, for example, at 14, for the first time, sex becomes important. The body goes through a biochemical change. If at that moment you can be introduced into the dimension of meditation, it will be very, very easy to move, because the body is not fixed. The old pattern has gone and the new has to come in. There is a gap. At the age of 21 again, deep changes happen. Because every 7 years the body completely renovates itself. All the old cells drop and the new cells come in. At the age of 35 again. And this goes on. Every 7 years your body comes to a point where the old goes and the new settles, and there is a transitory period. In that transitory period, everything is liquid. If you want some new dimension to enter into your life, that is precisely the moment. Exactly same it happens in the history of humanity as a whole. Every 25 centuries there comes a peak. And if you can use that moment, you can become easily enlightened. It will not be so easy in other times, because the river itself is flowing in that direction. Everything is fluid. Nothing is fixed. 25 centuries before, in India was born Gautam Buddha, Mahavir the Jinnah. In China, Lao Tse, Chuang Tzu. In Iran, Zarathustra. And in Greece, Heraclitus. They are the peaks. Never before such peaks were attained. Or if they were attained, they are not part of history, because history starts with Jesus. We don't know what happened before these 25 centuries before. Again, the moment is coming. We are again in a fluid state. The old is meaningless. The past doesn't have any significance for you. Future is uncertain. The gap is here. And again humanity will achieve a peak, the same peak as it was in Heraclitus' time. And if you are a little aware, you can use this moment. you can simply drop out of the wheel of life. When things are liquid, transformation is easy. When things are fixed, then transformation is difficult. You are fortunate that you are born in an age when things are again in a state of liquidity. Nothing is certain. All old codes and commandments have become useless. New patterns have not settled in. They will settle soon, because men cannot remain forever unsettled. Because when you are unsettled, there is an insecurity. Things will settle again. This moment will not long forever. It is only for a few years. If you can use it, you can reach to a peak that will be very, very difficult in other times. If you miss it, this moment is missed for 25 centuries again. Remember this, life moves in a cycle. Everything moves in a cycle. The child is born, then comes the age of youth, then old age, then death. It moves just like as seasons move. Summer comes, then rains follow, then comes winter, and it goes on in a circle. The same happens in the dimension of consciousness. Each 25 centuries and the circle is complete, and before the new circle starts, there is a gap you can escape through. The door is open for a few years. Heraclitus is a really rare flowering. One of the most highly penetrating soul, one of the souls who become like Everest, the highest peak of the Himalayas. Try to understand him, because it is difficult. That's why he is called Heraclitus the Obscure. He is not obscure. To understand him is difficult. To understand him, you will need a different type of being. That is the problem. So it is easy to categorize him as obscure and forget. There are two types of persons. If you want to understand Aristotle, you don't need any change of in your being. You simply need some information. A school can provide some information about logic, philosophy. You collect some intellectual understanding and you can understand Aristotle. You need not change to understand him. You need only few more additions in your knowledge. The being remains the same. You remain the same. You need not have a different plane of consciousness. That is not the requirement. Aristotle is clear. If you want to understand him, a little effort is enough. Anybody of the average mind and intelligence will understand him. But to understand Heraclitus is going to be rough terrain, difficult. Because whatsoever you collect as knowledge will not be of much help. Just a very, very cultivated head won't be of any help. You will need a different quality of being. And that is difficult. You will need a transformation. Hence he is called obscure. He is not obscure. You are below the level of being where he can be understood. When you reach to that level of being, suddenly all darkness around him disappears. He is one of the most luminous beings. He is not obscure. He is not dark. It is you who are blind. Remember this always. Because if you say he is dark, you are throwing the responsibility on him. You are trying to escape from a transformation that is possible through encountering him. Don't say that he is dark, say that we are blind, or our eyes are closed. The sun is there. You can stand in front of the sun and with closed eyes, and you can say the sun is dark. And sometimes it also happens that you can stand with open eyes before the sun, but the light is so much, your eyes temporarily go blind. The light is too much to bear. It is unbearable. Suddenly darkness. Eyes are open, the sun is there, but the sun is too much for your eyes. You feel darkness. And that is the case. Heraclitus is not dark. Either you are blind, or you are with closed eyes, or the third possibility is also there. When you look at Heraclitus, he is such a luminous being that your eyes simply lose the capacity to see. He is unbearable. The light is too much for you. You are not accustomed for such light. You will need to make few arrangements before you can understand Heraclitus. And when he is talking, he looks riddling. He looks as if he is enjoying riddles, because he talks in paradoxes. All those who have known always talk in paradoxes. There is something to it. They are not riddling, they are very simple. But what can they do? If life itself is paradoxical, what they can do? Just to avoid paradox, you can create neat and clean theories, but they will be false. They will not be true to life. Aristotle is very neat, clean. He looks like a man-managed garden. Heraclitus looks riddling. He is a wild forest. With Aristotle there is no trouble. He has avoided the paradox. He has made a neat and clean doctrine. It appeals. To face Heraclitus, you will be scared, because he opens the door of life, and life is paradoxical. Buddha is paradoxical. Lao Tse is paradoxical. All those who have known are bound to be paradoxical, because what they can do? If life itself is paradoxical, they have to be true to life. And life is not logical. It is a logos, but it is not logic. It is a cosmos. It is not a chaos, but it is not a logic. The word logos has to be understood, because Heraclitus will use it. And the difference between logos and logic has also to be understood. Logic is a doctrine about what is the true, and logos is truth itself. Logos is existential. Logic is not existential, logic is intellectual, theoretical. Try to understand. If you see life, you will say there is death also. How can you avoid death if you look at life, it is implied. Every moment of life is also a moment of death. You cannot separate them. It becomes a riddling thing. Life and death are not two separate phenomena. They are two faces of the same, two aspects of the same coin. If you penetrate deeply, you will see that life is death and death is life. The moment you are born, you have started dying. And if this is so, then when you will die, you will start living again. If death is implied in life, then life will be implied in death. They belong to each other. They are complementary. They are just like two wings or two legs. You cannot go only by right leg or the left leg. In life, you cannot be rightist or leftist. You have to be both together. In doctrine, you can be a rightist, you can be a leftist. Doctrine is never true to life and cannot be, because doctrine of necessity needs to be clean, neat, clear, and life is not that. Life is vast. Somewhere, one of the greatest poets of the world, Whitman, has said that I contradict myself because I am vast. Through logic, you will attain to a very tiny mind. You cannot be vast. If you are afraid of contradiction, you cannot be vast. Then you will have to choose. Then you will have to suppress. Then you will have to avoid the contradiction. Then you will have to hide it. But by your hiding, can it disappear? Just not looking at death, are you going not to die? You can avoid death. You can have your back towards it. You can forget completely about it. That's why we don't talk about death. It is not good manners. We don't talk about it. We avoid it. Death happens every day, everywhere it is happening. But we avoid it. The moment a man dies, we are in a hurry to be finished with him. We make our graveyards out of the town, so nobody goes there. And there also, we make graves with marble and write beautiful lines on them. We go and put the flowers on graveyards. What are you doing? You are trying to decorate it a little. In the West, it has become a profession how to hide death. There are professionals who help you how to avoid it. How to make the dead body beautiful, as if it is still alive. What we are doing? But can this help in any way? Death is there. You are headed towards the graveyard. Wherever you make it, it makes no difference. You will reach there. You are already on the way. You are standing in the queue, waiting for your only, for the moment. Just waiting in the queue to die. Where you can escape from death. But logic tries to be clear. And just to be clear, it avoids that. It says life is life, death is death. They are separate. Aristotle says A is A, it is never B. That became the foundation stone of all Western thought. Avoid the contradiction. Love is love, hate is hate, love is never hate. This is foolish. Because every love implies hate. Has to. That's how nature is. You love the person and you hate the same person. You have to. You cannot avoid it. If you try to avoid, everything will become false. That's why your love has become false. It is not true. It is not authentic. It cannot be sincere. It is a facet. Why it is a facet? Because you are avoiding the other. You say you are my friend, and a friend cannot be an enemy. And you are my enemy, you cannot be my friend. But these are two aspects of the same coin. The enemy is a hidden friend, and the friend is a hidden enemy. The other aspect is hidden, but it is there. But it will be too much for you. If you see both, it will be unbearable. If you see the enemy in the friend, you will not be able to love him. If you see the friend in the enemy, you will not be able to hate him. The whole life will become a riddle. Heraclitus is called the riddler. He is not. He is true to life. Whatsoever it is, he simply reports it. He has no doctrine about life. He is not a system maker. He is simply a mirror. Whatsoever life is, he represents it. Your face changes, the mirror represents it. You are loving, the mirror represents it. Next moment you become hateful, the mirror represents it. The mirror is not riddling. It is true. Aristotle is not like a mirror. He is like a dead photograph. It doesn't change. It doesn't move with life. That's why Aristotle says there is some defect in this man Heraclitus. Some defect in his very character. For Aristotle, mind should be clear, systematic, rational. Logic should be the goal of life, and you should not mix the opposites. But who is mixing them? Heraclitus is not mixing them. They are there mixed. Heraclitus is not responsible for them. And how can you separate if they are mixed in life itself? Yes, in your books you can try, but your books will be false. A logical statement is basically going to be false because it cannot be a life statement. And a life statement is going to be illogical because life exists through contradictions. Look at life, everywhere there is contradiction. But nothing is wrong in contradiction. It is just because it is unbearable for your logical mind. If you attain to a mystic insight, it becomes beautiful. Really, beauty cannot exist without it. If you cannot hate the same person you love, there will be no tension between your love. It will be a dead thing. There will be no polarity. Everything will go stale. What happens? If you love a person, in the morning you love, by the afternoon it has become hate. Why? What is the reason of it? Why it is so in life? Because when you hate, you go separate. The initial distance is again regained. Before you fell in love, you were two separate individuals. When you fell in love, you became a unity. You became a community. You must understand this verse. Community is very beautiful. It means common unity. You became a community. You attained to a common unity. But community is beautiful for few moments, then it looks like slavery. For a few moments, to attain to common unity is beautiful. It leads to a height, to a peak. But you cannot live on the peak forever. Then who will live in the valley? And the peak is beautiful only because there is valley. And if you cannot move to the valley again, the peak will lose all its peakness. It is against the valley that it is a peak. If you make a house there, you will forget about that this is a peak. The whole beauty of love will be lost. In the morning you love, by the evening, by the afternoon you are filled with hate. You have moved to the valley. You have moved to the initial position before you fell into love. Now you are again individuals. To be individual is also beautiful because it is a freedom. To be in the valley is also beautiful because it is a relaxation. To be in the dark valley is soothing. It helps you to regain balance. Then you are ready again to go to the peak. By the evening you are again in love. This is a process of coming apart, then coming together. And again and again, when you fall in love again after a hateful moment, it is a new honeymoon. If there is no change and life is static, if you cannot move to the opposite, everything will go still and it will become boring. That's why people who are too much cultivated become boring. Because they always go on smiling. They are never angry. You insult them and they smile. You praise them and they smile. You condemn them and they smile. They will be unbearable. Their smile will be dangerous. And their smile cannot be very deep. It will remain just at the lips. It is a face. They are not smiling. They are just following a code. And their smile will be ugly. People who are always in love and never hate, never get angry, you will always find them superficial. Because if you don't move to the opposite, from where you will gain depth? Depth comes through a movement to the opposite. Love is hate. In fact, we should not use the word love and hate. We should use a single word, love-hate. A love relationship is a love-hate relationship. And it is beautiful. Nothing is wrong in hate, because it is through hate that you gain love. Nothing is wrong in being angry, because it is through anger that you come to a silent stillness. Have you observed? Every morning, aeroplanes pass from here. A loud sound. And when the aeroplane has passed, a deep silence follows in the wake. It was not so silent before the aeroplane came. No. When the aeroplane has gone, it is more silent. Walking through a street, suddenly on a dark night, a car comes up. With full speed, it passes by you. Your eyes are dazzled by the light. When the car has passed, it is more dark than before. Through the opposite, through the tension of the opposite, everything lives and becomes deeper. Go away so that you can come near. Move to the opposites so that you can come closer again. A love relationship is a relationship in falling again and again in honeymoons. If the honeymoon is over and the thing has settled, it is already dead. Anything that is settled is dead. Life remains through an unsettled movement. Anything that is secure is already in the grave. Your bank balances are your graveyards. That is where you have died. If you are totally secure, you are no more alive. Because to be alive is basically to move between the opposites. Illness is not bad. It is through illness that you regain health. Everything fits in the harmony. That's why Heraclitus is called the Riddler. Lao Tzu would have understood him deeply, but Aristotle could not understand. And unfortunately, Aristotle became the source of Greek thought. And Greek thought, even more unfortunately, became the whole base of the Western mind. What is the message of Heraclitus, the deepest message you understand so you can follow? He does not believe in things. He believes in processes. Process is God to him. And if you watch closely, you will see there are not things in the world. Everything is a process. In fact, to use the word is existentially wrong, because everything is becoming. Nothing is in a state of isness. Nothing. You say this is a tree. By the time you say, it is growing. Your statement is already false. The tree is never static, so how you can use the word is? It is always becoming. Becoming something else. Everything is growing, moving in a process. Life is movement. It is like a river. Always moving. Says Heraclitus, you cannot step in the same river twice. Because by the time you come to step into it twice, it has moved. It is a flow. Can you meet the same person twice? Impossible. You were here yesterday morning also. But am I the same? Are you the same? Both the rivers have changed. You may be tomorrow again here, but you will not find me. Somebody else will be here. Life is changing. Only change is eternal, says Heraclitus. Only change never changes. Everything else changes. He believes in a permanent revolution. Everything is in revolution. It is how it is there. To be means to become. To remain where you are means to move. You cannot stay. Nothing is static. Even the hills, the Himalayas, are not static. They are moving. Moving fast. They are born, then they die. This Himalayas is one of the youngest mountains in the world, and it is still growing. It has not reached up to its peak yet. It is very young. Every year 1 foot it grows. There are old mountains whose peak has been attained. Now they are falling down, old. Their back is bent. These walls you see around you, every particle of it is in movement. You cannot see the movement because the movement is very subtle and fast. Now, physicists agree with Heraclitus, not with Aristotle, remember. Whenever any science will reach nearer to reality, it will have to agree with Laus and Heraclitus. Now, physicists say everything is in movement. Eddington has said that the only world which is false is rest. Nothing is in rest. Nothing can be. It is a false world. It doesn't correspond to any reality. Is just in the language. In life, in existence, there is no is. Everything is becoming. Heraclitus himself, when he talks about the river, and the symbol of river is very, very deep with him. You cannot step in the river, the same river, twice. And he says, even if you step, you are the same. And you are not the same. Just on the surface you look the same. Not only the river has changed, you have also changed. It happened. A man came to Buddha to insult him. He spat on his face. Buddha wiped his face and asked the man, "Have you anything more to say?" As if he has said something. The man was puzzled because he never expected this type of response. He went away. Next day he came because the whole night he couldn't sleep. He felt it more and more that he has done something absolutely wrong. He felt guilty. Next morning he came, fell in Buddha's feet and said, "Forgive me." The Buddha says, "Who will forgive you now?" The man you spit upon is no more. And the man you were who spit is no more also. So who will forgive whom? Forget about it. Now nothing can be done about it. It cannot be undone. Finished. Because nobody is there. both the parties are dead. What can be done? You are a new man and I am a new man. This is the deepest message of Heraclitus. Everything flows and changes. Everything moves, nothing is static. And the moment you cling, you miss reality. Your clinging becomes the problem because reality changes and you cling. You loved me yesterday, now you are angry. And I cling to the yesterday. And I say you have to love me because yesterday you were loving. And yesterday you have said you will love me always. Now what has happened? But what can you do? And yesterday when you have said that you will love me always, it was not false. But it was not a promise either. It was simply the mood. And you believed in the mood too much. At that moment, you felt it. That you will love me always and always and always, forever. And it was not untrue, remember. It was true to the moment, that was the mood. But now that mood is gone. One who has said is no more there. And if it is gone, it is gone. Nothing can be done. You cannot force love. That's what we are doing and making much misery out of it. The husband says, love me. The wife says, love me because you promised. Have you forgotten the courting days? But they are no more there. Those persons are also no more there. A young man of 20, just you remember. Are you the same man? Much has passed. The Ganges has flown too much. You are no more there. I have heard one night Mullah Nasruddin's wife said that you no more love me. You no more kiss. You no more hug. Remember when you were courting me? You used to bite me. And I loved that very much. Can't you bite me once more? Nasruddin got out of his bed. He started walking. The wife said, where are you going? He said, to the bathroom to take my teeth. No, you cannot step in the same river twice. It is impossible. Don't cling. If you cling, you create a hell. Clinging is hell. And a non-clinging consciousness is always in heaven. One moves with the mood. One accepts the mood. One accepts the change. There is no grudge, no complaint about it. Because this is how life is, things are. You can fight, but you cannot change. When somebody is young, of course there are different moods, because youth has different seasons and moods. How can an old man have the same? And the old man will look very foolish with those moods. How can an old man say the same thing? Everything has changed. When you are young, you are romantic, unexperienced, dreamy. When you are old, all the dreams have gone. Nothing is bad in it, because when the dreams are gone, you are nearer and closer to reality. Now you understand more. You are less a poet. Because you cannot dream now. But nothing is wrong. Dream was a mood, a season. It changes. And one has to be true to his state in which one finds himself at a certain point. Be true to your changing self. Because that is the only reality. That's why Buddha says there is no self. You are a river. There is no self, because there is nothing unchanging in you. Buddha was thrown out of India because the Indian mind, particularly the Brahmins, the Hindus, believed in a permanent self, Atma. They always said something is permanent, and Buddha said only change is permanent, nothing is permanent. Why you want to be a permanent thing? Why you want to be dead? Because only a dead thing can be permanent. Waves come and go. That's why the ocean is alive. If waves stop, everything will stop in the ocean. It will be a dead thing. Everything lives through change. And change means changing to the polarity. You move from one pole to another. That's how you again and again become alive and fresh. The day you work hard, and in the night you relax and go into sleep. Again in the morning you are alive and fresh to work. Have you ever observed the polarity? Work is against relaxation. If you work hard, you become tense, tired, exhausted. But then you fall into the deep valley of rest, a deep relaxation. The surface is far away. You move to the center. You are no more the identity you are at the surface, no more the name, the ego. No more anything from the surface is carried. You simply forget who you are. And in the morning you are fresh. This forgetfulness is good, it makes you fresh. Just try for 3 weeks not to sleep. You will go mad. Because you have forgotten to move to the opposite. If Aristotle is right, then if you don't sleep at all, you don't move to the opposite, then you will become an enlightened man. You will be mad. And because of Aristotle, so many mad people in the West. And if they don't listen to the East, or to Heraclitus, sooner or later the whole West is going to be mad. It is bound to be so, because you have lost the polarity. Logic will say something else. Logic will say rest the whole day. Practice rest the whole day so that you can go in the night in a deep sleep. This is logical. This is logical. Practice rest. This is what rich people do. They rest the whole day. Then they say insomnia. Then they say we cannot sleep. And they are practicing the whole day. Lying on the bed, lying on their easy chairs, resting and resting and resting. And then in the night they found suddenly, they find that they cannot sleep. They have followed Aristotle. They are logical. One day Mullah Nasruddin came to his doctor. Coughing, he entered. The doctor said, it looks better. Nasruddin said, of course it had to look better, has to look better, because the whole night I practiced it. If you practice the whole day, rest, in the night you will be restless, you will change your sides again and again. That is just an exercise the body is doing, so that some rest becomes possible. No. In life, you cannot find more wrong a man than Aristotle. move to the opposite. Work hard in the day and you will go to a deeper sleep in the night. Go deeper in the sleep and in the morning you will find you are capable of doing tremendous work. Infinite energy you have. Throw rest, one gains to energy. Throw work, one gains to rest. Just the opposite. People come to me and they say, we have insomnia, we cannot sleep, so tell us something, how to relax. They are Aristotelian. I tell them, there is no need for you to relax. You just go for a walk, long walk. Run madly. 2 hours in the morning, 2 in the evening. And then rest will follow automatically. It always follows. You don't need techniques of relaxation. You need techniques of active meditation, not relaxation. You are already too much relaxed. That's what insomnia is showing, that you are already too much relaxed. There is no need. Life moves through one opposite to another. And Heraclitus says, this is the secret, the hidden harmony. This is the hidden harmony. He is very poetic, he has to be. He cannot be philosophic, because philosophy means reason. Poetry can be contradictory. Poetry can say things which philosophers will be ashamed to say. Poetry is truer to life. And philosophers just go around and around. They never hit the point in the center. They beat the bush around and around. Poetry simply hits directly. In the East, if you want any parallels of Heraclitus, then you will find in Zen masters, Zen poets, particularly in the poetry known as haiku. One of the great masters of haiku is Basso. Basso and Heraclitus are absolutely close, in a deep embrace. They are almost one. Basso has not written anything in a philosophical way. He has written a small haikus. Just 3-line, 17-syllable haikus. Just small pieces. Heraclitus also has written fragments. He has not written a system like Hegel, Kant. He is not a systematizer. Just oracular maxims. Each fragment complete in itself. Just like diamonds. Each cut to its perfection in itself. No need to be related to another. He has spoken in an oracular way. The whole method of oracular maxim disappeared from the West. Only Nietzsche has written in the same way again. His book, Thus Spake Zarathustra, is oracular maxims. But since Heraclitus, only Nietzsche. In the East, everybody who has been enlightened has written in that way. That is the way of the Upanishads, the Vedas, the Buddha, Lao Tse, Chuang Tzu, Basso. Just maxims. So small that you have to penetrate them, and just trying to understand them you will change. And your intellect cannot cope with them, says Basso in a small haiku. An ancient pond A frog jumps in. The sound of water. Finished. He has said everything. Pictorial. You can see an ancient pond. A frog sitting on the bank. And the jump of the frog. You can see the splash and the sound of water. And says Basu, everything has been said. This is all life is. An ancient pond. A jump of the frog. The sound of water. And silence. This is what you are. This is what everything is. And silence. The same way Heraclitus talks in his river fragment. First he uses the sounds of a river. Before he says something, he uses the sounds of the river. And then he gives the maxim, you cannot step twice in the same river. He is a poet, but no ordinary poet. A poet Hindus have always called a rishi. There are two types of poets. One who is still dreaming and creating a poetry out of his dreams. A Byron, a Shelley, a Keats. Then there is another type of poet, a rishi, who is no more dreaming. He looks at the reality, and out of the reality a poetry is born. Heraclitus is a rishi, a poet who is no more dreaming, who has encountered existence. He is the first existentialist in the West. Now, try to penetrate his oracular maxims. The hidden harmony is better than the obvious. Why? Why the hidden harmony is better than the obvious? Because the obvious is on the surface. And the surface can deceive. And the surface can be cultivated, conditioned. At the center, you are existential. At the surface, you are social. Marriage is at the surface. Love is at the center. Love has a hidden harmony. Marriage has an obvious harmony. Just go to some friend's house. You look from the window, and the husband and wife are fighting, and their ugly faces. And the moment you enter, everything changes. They are so polite. They are talking to each other so lovingly. A harmony that is obvious. A harmony that is on the surface. But deep down, there is no harmony. It is just a mannerism. It is just for the display. A real man may appear unharmonious at the surface, but he will be always be harmonious in the center. If even he contradicts himself, in his contradictions, there will be a hidden harmony. And a person who never contradicts is absolutely consistent at the surface. Will not have the real harmony. There are consistent people. If they love, they love. If they hate, they hate. They don't allow opposites to mingle and meet. They are absolutely clear who is their enemy and who is their friend. And they live on the surface. And they create a consistency. Their consistency is not real consistency. Deep down, inconsistencies are boiling. On the surface, they are somehow managing. You know them because you are them. On the surface, you manage. But this won't help. Don't be bothered too much with the surface. Go deeper. And don't try to choose between the opposites. You will have to live both. And if you can live both, non-attached, unattached to either, if you can live both, if you can love and remain a witness, and you can hate and remain a witness, that witnessing will be the hidden harmony. Then you know these are climates, changes in the season, moods come and go. Just, and you will see the gestalt in them. This German word gestalt is beautiful. It says there is a harmony between the figure and the background. They are not opposites. They appear opposites. For example, in a smallish school, you see the blackboard and the teacher writes with a white chalk on the blackboard. Black and white are opposites. Yes, for Aristotelian minds they are opposites. Black is black and white is white, and they are the polarities. But why this teacher is writing with white on black? Can't she write with white on white? Can't she write with black on black? She can, but it will be useless. The black has to be the background and the white becomes the figure on it. They contrast. There is a tension between them. They are opposites and there is a hidden harmony. The white looks whiter on black. That's the harmony. On white it will simply disappear because there is no tension, no opposition. Remember, Jesus would have disappeared if Jews had not crucified him. They made it a gestalt. The cross is the blackboard. Jesus came whiter on it. Jesus would have completely disappeared. It is because of the cross he has remained. And it is because of the cross he has penetrated people's heart more than a Buddha, more than a Mahavir. Almost half of the world has fallen in love with him. It is because of the cross. He was a white line on a blackboard. Buddha is a white line on a whiteboard. The contrast is not there. The gestalt is not there. The background is just the same as the figure. If you simply love and can't hate, your love will not be birth, will be simply useless. It will have no intensity in it. It will not be a flame. It will not be a passion. It will be simply cold. It becomes a passion. And passion is a beautiful word. Because passion has intensity. But how it becomes a passion? Because the same man is capable of hate also. Compassion has an intensity. if the same man is capable of anger also. If he is simply incapable of anger, then his compassion will be just impotent. Just impotent. He is helpless, that's why compassion is there. He cannot hate, that's why he loves. When you love in spite of hate, there is passion. Then it becomes a figure and background phenomena. Then there is a gestalt. And Heraclitus is talking of the deepest gestalt. That is, the obvious harmony is no harmony really. The hidden harmony is the real harmony. So don't try to be consistent on the surface. Rather find a consistency between the deep inconsistencies. Find a harmony between the deepest opposites. The hidden harmony is better than the obvious. That is the difference between a religious man and a moral man. A moral man is just harmonious on the surface. A religious man is harmonious at the center. A religious man is bound to be contradictory. A moral man is always consistent. You can rely on a moral man, you cannot rely on a religious man. A moral man is predictable, a religious man never. How Jesus will behave, nobody knows. Even his close disciples were not aware. They couldn't predict him. This man was unpredictable. He talks of love and then he takes a whip in the temple and chases the money changers out of the temple, and he talks of compassion, and he talks in terms of love your enemy, and he upsets the whole temple. He is rebellious. A man who talks of love seems to be inconsistent. Bertrand Russell has written a book, Why I Am Not a Christian. In that book he raises all these inconsistencies. He says Jesus is inconsistent and looks neurotic. Somewhere he says, love your enemy, and then he behaves in such an angry way. Not only with persons, even with trees. He curses a fig tree. They came near the fig tree and they were hungry. And it was no season at all for the figs to come. And they looked at the tree and there were no fruits. And it is said Jesus cursed the tree. What type of man is this? And he talks of love. He has a hidden harmony. Bertrand Russell cannot find it because he is the modern Aristotle. He cannot find it. He cannot understand it. It is good that he is not a Christian. Very, very good. He cannot be a Christian. He cannot be a religious man. He is a moralist. Each act should be consistent. But with what? With whom? With whom it should be consistent? With your past? My one assertion should be consistent with another. Why? It is possible only if the river is not flowing. Have you watched a river? Sometimes it is going left, sometimes it is going right, sometimes to the south, sometimes to the north. And you will see that this river is very inconsistent. But there is a hidden harmony. It reaches to the ocean. Wherever it is going, the ocean is the goal. Sometimes it had to move towards the south because the slope is towards the south. Sometimes it has to move just the opposite towards the north, because the slope is towards the north. But in every direction it is finding the same goal. It is moving towards the ocean, and you will see it has reached. Think of a river which is consistent, which says, I will always move to the south. Because how I can move to the north? People will say, I am inconsistent. This river will never reach to the ocean. Rivers of Russell and Aristotle never reach to the ocean. They are too consistent, too much on the surface, and they don't know it in harmony. That through opposites you can seek the same goal. The same goal can be sought through the opposites. That possibility is completely unknown to them. That possibility is there. The hidden harmony is better than the obvious. But difficult. Because you will be in constant difficulty. People expect consistency from you. And a hidden harmony is not a part of the society. It is part of the cosmos, but not of the society. Society is a man-made affair. And society has worked out the whole plan as if everything is static. Society has created morality's codes as if everything is unmoving. That's why moralities continue for centuries together. Everything changes and dead rules continue. Everything goes on changing. And the so-called moralists always go on preaching the same things, which are absolutely irrelevant, but they are consistent with their past. Absolutely irrelevant things go on. For example, in the times of Muhammad, in Arabian countries, there were 4 times more women than men. Because the Arabians were warriors and continuously warring and killing each other, murderers. And women have never been so foolish. So they survived 4 times more. Then what to do? The whole society, if there are 4 times more women than men, then you can understand. It will be too difficult for any morality to be there. Much problems will arise. So Muhammad made a rule that every Mohammedan can marry 4 women. They are still following the rule. Now it has become an ugly thing. But they say they are consistent with Quran. Now the whole situation is different. Absolutely different. There are not 4 times more women now. But they follow. And the thing that was a beautiful response in a particular historic situation is now ugly. Absolutely ugly. But they will follow it because Mohammedans are very consistent people. They can't change. And you cannot consult Muhammad again. He is not there. And Mohammedans are very, very cunning. They have closed the door for any prophet to come again, otherwise he will do something, some change. So this Muhammad is the last. So even the door is closed, even if Muhammad wants to come, he cannot come. Because they have closed the door. Because always it happens, moralists always close the door, because any new prophet will always create trouble. Because a new prophet cannot be consistent with old rules. He will live the moment. he will have his own discipline consistent with the reality now. But what is the guarantee it will be consistent with the past? There is no guarantee. It is not going to be so. So every moral tradition closes the door. Jains have closed their door. They said Mahavir is the last. Now no more Tirthankara. Mohammedans say Muhammad is the last. Christians say Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. Now no more. All doors closed. Why moralists always close the doors? Just as a safety measure. Because if a prophet comes, if a man who lives moment to moment, he will topsy-turvy everything. He will create a chaos. And somehow you get settled, a church, a morality, a code, everything fixed, and you follow the rules. On the surface you attain an obvious harmony, and again a prophet comes and he creates everything, disturbs everything. He starts creating everything anew again. A moralist is a man on the surface. He lives for the rules. Rules are not for him. He is for the scripture. His scriptures are not for him. He follows the rules. But he doesn't follow awareness. If you follow awareness, witnessing, you will attain to a hidden harmony. Then you are not bothered by the opposite, you can use it. And once you can use the opposite, you have a secret key. You can make your love more beautiful through hate. Hate is not the enemy of love. It is the very salt that makes love beautiful. It is the background. Then you can make your compassion intense through anger. Then it is not the opposite. And this is the meaning of Jesus when he says, love your enemies. This is the meaning. Love your enemies, because enemies are not enemies, they are friends. You can use them. In a hidden harmony, they fall and become one. Anger is the enemy, use it. Make it a friend. Hate is the enemy, use it. Make it a friend. Allow your love to grow deeper through it. Make it a soil. It becomes a soil. That is the hidden harmony of Heraclitus. Love the enemy. Use the opposite. Opposite is not the opposite. It is just the background. Opposition brings concord. Out of discord comes the fairest harmony. Never Heraclitus is surpassed. Opposition brings concord. Out of discord comes the fairest harmony. It is in changing that things find repose. People do not understand how that which is at variance with itself agrees with itself. There is a harmony in the bending back, as in the case of the bow and lyre. The name of the bow is life, but its work is death. Of course, to the rationalist he will look riddling, obscure, dark. But is he? He's so crystal clear, if you can see. He's so luminous. But if you are addicted with the rational mind, it becomes difficult, because he says out of disharmony. The fairest harmony is born. Opposition brings concord. love the enemy. Life will be absolutely saltless if the opposition is simply destroyed. Just think of a world where evil doesn't exist. Do you think good will exist? Just think of a world where there is no sinner. Do you think there will be all saints? The saint cannot exist without the sinner. The saint needs the sinner. The sinner cannot exist without the saint. The sinner needs the saint. There is a harmony, hidden harmony. They are polarities. And life is beautiful because of both. God cannot exist without the devil. God is eternal, devil is also eternal. People come to ask me, they say, why? If there is God, why there is so much misery, evil, bad? Why? It is because God cannot exist without them. That is the background. God alone without the evil will be just tasteless. Just tasteless. You can vomit him, but you cannot eat him. Just tasteless. Nauseous. He knows the hidden harmony. He cannot exist without the devil. So don't hate the devil. Use him. If God is using him, why not you? If God cannot exist without him, how you can? So real saints, saints who have a intensity, are just like Gurdjieff. Alan Watt has written about Gurdjieff that he is the holiest rascal I have ever known. And it is so. He is a rascal, but the holiest. God himself is that rascal, holiest. You cut the evil, and simultaneously you have killed God. The game needs two parties. When Adam was tempted by the evil, it was God himself who was tempting. It is a conspiracy. The serpent is in the service of God, the devil also. The very word devil is beautiful. It comes from a Sanskrit root which means the divine. The divine comes from the same root div as the devil. Both words come from the same root. As if the root is one, only the branches are different. On one branch devil, on another branch divine. But the root is the same, div. There must be a conspiracy, otherwise the game cannot continue. There must be a deep harmony. That is the conspiracy. Here God says to Adam that you are not to eat from this tree of knowledge. Now the conspiracy starts, the game starts. Now, the first rules are being set. Christianity has missed many beautiful things, because they have tried to create an obvious harmony. And Christian theologians have been for 20 centuries worried about devil, how to explain him. There is no need. This is simple. Heraclitus knows. It is very simple. No need to explain. But Christians have been worried, because if devil is, God must have created him. Otherwise, how he is there? And if devil is there, God must be allowing him to be there. Otherwise, how he can be there? And if God cannot destroy him, your God becomes impotent. Then you cannot call him omnipotent. And if God created devil without knowing that he is going to be devil, then he is not omniscient, all-knowing. He creates the devil not knowing that this is going to disturb the whole world. He creates Adam not knowing that he will eat the fruit of the tree. He prohibits. Then he is not omniscient, all-knowing. If devil is there, then God cannot be omnipresent. Because in devil, who is present? Then he cannot be everywhere. At least in the devil's heart, he is not there. And if he is in the devil's heart, then why condemn poor devils? There is a conspiracy, a hidden harmony. God prohibited Adam not to eat just to tempt him. This is the first temptation. Because whenever you say, don't do this, temptation has entered. Devil comes only later on. The first temptation is from God himself. Otherwise, in the Garden of Eden, there were millions of trees. If Adam was left to himself, it is almost impossible that he could have found the tree of knowledge. Almost impossible, unbelievable. Even up to now, we have not been able to find all the trees of this earth. Many trees still remain unknown, uncategorized. Many species still have to be discovered. And this earth is nothing. The Garden of Eden was God's garden. Millions and millions of trees, infinite. Left to himself, alone, Adam and Eve were never going to find. But God tempted. This, I insist, that the temptation comes from God. And devil is just the other partner of the game. He tempted, don't eat. And immediately the tree was known. And then the desire must have come. Why God prohibits? There must be something. And it is not prohibited to God. He himself eats from it. And just for us it is prohibited. The mind has started to function, the game starts. Then, just as a partner in the conspiracy, devil comes, the serpent, and he says, eat it, because if you eat, you will be like gods. And that is the deepest desire in the human mind, to be like gods. And the devil did the trick, because he knows the conspiracy. He didn't approach Adam directly, he approached through Eve. Because if you want to tempt a man, you can tempt him only through the woman. Otherwise, directly there is no temptation. Every temptation comes through sex. Every temptation comes through woman. Woman is more important for the devil to play the game. Because it is impossible to say no to a woman who loves you. You can say no to the devil, but to the woman. And the devil comes in the form of the serpent. That is just a phallic symbol. Symbol for the sex organ. Because there is nothing like serpent to represent male sex organ. They are exactly alike. And through woman it comes. Because how can you say no to a woman? Mullah Nasruddin has arranged for his wife to go to the mountains for her asthma. But the wife was not willing. She refused. She said, "I am afraid that the mountaineer is going to disagree with me." Mullah Nasruddin said, "My dear, you don't be worried. There is no mountaineer that brave to disagree with you. You don't be worried. It is impossible to disagree with a woman you love. So women become easy conspirators with the devil." Then the temptation entered, and Adam ate the apple, the tree, the fruit of knowledge, and that's why you are out of the Garden of Eden. And the game continues. It is a deep hidden harmony. God cannot function alone. It will be just like electricity functioning with a positive pole only, no negative pole. It will be functioning only with man, no woman. No, he had tried it before, failed. He first made Adam, but he failed, because alone Adam, the game was not going on. There was no go. Then he created woman. And the first woman he created was not Eve. The first woman was Lilith. But she must have believed in women's liberation movement. She cried, she created trouble. Because she said, "I am just as independent as you." And the first day when they were going to sleep, the trouble came, because they had only one cot, one bed. So who will sleep on the bed and who will sleep on the floor? Lilith simply said, "No, you sleep on the floor. I will." This is what the liberation movement goes on. And Adam didn't listen. Lilith disappeared. Lilith went to God and she said, "I'm not going to play this game." This is how in the West a woman is disappearing. The Lilith is disappearing, and the beauty and the grace and everything, and the whole game is in trouble. Because there are women who say, "Don't love a man." I was reading a pamphlet. They say, "Kill man. Murder every man. Because if man lives, there can be no freedom for woman. But if you kill man, can you be there? The game needs both." Lilith disappeared, then the game could not continue, so God had to create a woman. That's why he tried one bone of man himself this time. Because to bring a separate woman will create again trouble. So he took out a rib of Adam and created a woman. So there is a polarity and still a unity. They are two and still belong to the same body. That is the meaning. They are two opposites and still belong to the same body, deep down the same root. They are one body deep down. That's why when they meet in deep loving embrace, they become one body. They come to that state where Adam was alone. They become one, meet and merge. The game continues because there is opposition for the game, but still there is oneness deep within. These two things are needed, opposition and still harmony. If there is absolute harmony, the game will disappear. Because to whom, with whom you will play? And if there is complete discard, opposition, absolute, no harmony, then too the game will disappear. Harmony in discard, oneness in opposition is the key of all mysteries. It is in changing that things find repose. People do not understand how that which is at variance with itself agrees with itself. Devil agrees with God, God agrees with devil. That's why devil exists. There is a harmony in the bending back and in the case of the bow and lyre. A musician plays with a bow and a lyre. The opposition is just on the surface. On the surface it is a clef, a struggle, a fight, a discard, but comes the beautiful music out of it. Opposition brings concord. Out of discard comes the fairest harmony. The name of the bow is life, but its work is result. And the death is its work, the ultimate result. Death and life are also not two. The name of the bow is life, but its work is death. So death cannot be really the opposite. It must be the lyre. If the name of life is bow, then the name of death must be the lyre. And between these two, the fairest harmony of life comes up. You are just in the middle between death and life. You are neither. So don't cling to life and don't be afraid of death. You are the music between the lyre and the bow. You are the clef and the meeting and the merging and the harmony and the fairest that is born out of it. Don't choose. If you choose, you will be wrong. If you choose, you become attached to one, identified with one. Don't choose. Let life be the bow, let death be the lyre, and you be the harmony, the hidden harmony. The hidden harmony is better than the obvious. Enough for today.